Hello, my name is Vladimir Deese, and this is a Class War Battlefield podcast. Quick comment, coming to you live from America Separated. Let's get started. In speaking with a Republican friend the other day, I realized that I had kind of been avoiding talking about issues that Republicans care most about in order to kind of showcase how we individuals who aren't Republicans, and really I guess I shouldn't say Republicans because in essence this is neoconservatives. These are neoconservatives. These are Christian conservatives. These are evangelical conservatives. So how we can try to bridge that gap. Because truthfully, as much as I'd like to pretend otherwise, I'm trying to bring these people back into reality. And I know some of you may have just said, oh my God, did he just say that we have no brains, that we don't think? That is not my meaning behind this. No, what my meaning is to say that these individuals are not rational. They're not basing what they're doing on ration. And I've actually, on reason, I should say, I've actually had this discussion with a friend of mine who is an evangelical, who is a conservative, and the person can't see it. And of course you can't see it because, well, I'm not a mirror, and I can't show them that internal self. So what I decided to do was make this individual podcast about abortion. And the whole concept of separate America is that we are becoming increasingly polarized. We are becoming increasingly segregated and separated amongst one another. And if we don't stop, we may face another civil war in this nation. Now, before I get started, I need to go back to this whole rational concept of the individuals not being rational. A lot of people, when they think purely with religion, they align themselves not with God. They align themselves with the righteous personality, a person who is righteous but is also godlike and is human, truthfully. The people who stand before the world and say, I speak for God. And so many individuals say that. I speak for God. Some of them dress it up nicely and say, oh, well, I'm a prophet. You know, I'm an anointed prophet. Well, who anointed you the prophet? That would have to be God. They speak in that kind of language. When people start to kind of go that way and follow these people, ration goes out the window. Reason is no longer plausible because they're thinking in terms of what could be, or I like to even think of it as they're thinking of terms in alternate reality. So, for instance, with abortion, they don't see the whole picture. They just see the act. They see the act. And what's amazing, and Chris Hedges pointed this out in his American Fascist book, what's amazing is a lot of the people who are against this, they are products of abortions, or should I say they had to go through abortions themselves, or I'm a believer because I'm... This is where my spirituality kind of crosses in here. I'm a believer that some of these individuals might have been victims of abortions or their parents were thinking of having an abortion. So this was imprinted on them. Particularly, the first part of that, when I say these individuals were victims of abortion, I'm talking about my belief in reincarnation. That some of these individuals were all set to come in, and for some reason or another, a parent had an abortion. And they've held on to that animosity. They've held on to that anger or what have you from that experience. And they haven't dealt with it. They haven't let it go. And truthfully, they don't understand it because we don't have conversations about it. I mean, even to the extent that people talk about reincarnation, people don't like to make the hard connections between reincarnation and the real world. And to the extent that they like to make those connections, it's always about, oh, well, let's just get proof that reincarnation exists in the good way. You know, people talking about past lives, people talking about past lives in which they can resolve, they don't often say, oh, well, you mean reincarnation could create a personality that hates abortions? We don't think like that. And I think it's difficult to think like that. I know a young lady right now who is showing all the signs of that she's going to become an individual who is staunchly against abortion. I mean, one of the most loving people you can meet. She's young. I mean, she's like early teens. And yet, when it comes to abortion, she is just fiery, and logic goes out the window. I'm hoping that changes, but I've seen this with her, and my concept of it when I first saw it was, oh my God, you know, we need to help this woman, this young girl, because this is not a good energy to carry around. But then upon thinking about it, I knew her mother when she was younger and had her. I said, I believe that there was a lot of thought within this young woman who was, I mean, she was young. She was 8th, 9th grade when she had this girl, when she had her baby. I said, I could already say, and without, you know, any doubt, that this young mother was contemplating having this girl aborted. And that's when the idea came to me that it could be individuals who have been a victim of abortion and came into life, or individuals who were in the womb of a mother who had thought about having an abortion. Now, some of you may still say, oh, well, that's still far-fetched, but given what we know about mothers and their ability to imprint their emotions, particularly stress, on their fetuses, this is not far-flung. This is not something that is not feasible. Actually, this could make more sense in understanding, or this could make the whole concept of this kind of move into... I apologize. I guess this is where the human part of me comes out, right? But this could make a lot more sense out of this complex mindset. I will also say this, too, before I move on to actually addressing the whole concept of abortion, but this also comes from and stems from this book that I read called Talking to Spirits. And ironically, it had very little to do with... Well, it did have a lot to do with talking to spirits, but it was basically about the spiritual awakening of this middle-class woman who found herself. And she discovered in the book that her father was a Frenchman who really never cared for her mother. And basically, it was one of those deals where it was hit it and quit it. And so her mother held some animosity towards this French guy. Well, imprinted in this woman's mind was this concept, and it came out through her desire to go to France. She always wanted to go to France, and yet she never did. But she always wanted to. And ultimately, it was through her meditations and her spiritual work that she came to the conclusion that, oh, no, this was where this originated from. And to me, there was a steep line to that, and I think we need to start thinking along more terms as this when we approach things like abortion. On to the actual subject of abortion, however. (sighs) abortion is one of those things that seems to get a lot of people riled up on, truthfully, both the left and the right, because left always talks about women's rights. The right says, how about that fetus? The fetus has rights too. Which to me, ironically, is kind of a wink and a nod toward reincarnation. It's a hell of a line to draw, but why does the fetus have rights? Well, because they believe life starts at conception. Well, that means that a spirit has to be there. And where does that spirit come from? Well, it comes from God. Well, where is God located? Well, he's located in heaven. Well, okay, is the spirit a part of God? Or does the spirit exist around God? And if the spirit exists around God, what does the spirit do before he or she enters his body? Then, of course, it turns into, well, God, you know, most people will say, oh, well, God created the spirit, okay? God created the spirit. Did God just create the spirit for one life? Did God create the spirit for multiple lives? You know, then you start getting into that, but I'm kind of off topic there. Anyway, so people get, you know, really excited about this. You have fetus rights, and then you have women's rights. As I always say to people, you know, you can't, when you're putting up life on life, you know, this person has rights, this person has rights, you lose because you're arguing the same point from different angles. One life is not more cherished than another life. But, unfortunately, two evangelical and Christian conservatives, unfortunately, science has proven their point wrong that life starts at conception. There are numerous studies out there, and Sylvie Brown is the one who first alerted me to this, which document that women, ordinary women, can tell when the soul enters their baby's body inside of them because their energy changes, their perception changes. If you talk to mothers about what their heightened perception during pregnancy, you see this. Their energy will go from a little one stable to one where they can, as one of my friends once put it, they can hear individuals knocking on doors two or three streets away. I mean, that's an amazing, amazing gift. You know, that the babies bring with them. But this, that kind of knocks out the whole concept that life starts at conception. But people don't want to talk about that because, well, then you get into the whole concept of, okay, well, wait a minute, how does the soul get into the body? Why does the soul take so long to get to the body? You know, what is the reason? I mean, it's just so much there that is spiritually motivated, we don't talk about it. I mean, it destroys religion when you start talking about things like this, which may also be another reason why so many Christian and evangelicals do not like science. Because you turn the page on religion and you really open up a chapter on real spirituality. So, you know, after we knock that out, then we have to turn ultimately to the actual abortion. And you have to start asking, why do people have abortions? And this is not something that a lot of these individuals like to discuss because it's difficult. You have to actually get to know these people. It's not all about just bring them to Jesus and Jesus will make everything fine. You have to pull these people out of this false reality. This is where that whole alternate reality comes from. This false reality where if you just have Jesus Christ, everything is good. And you have to put them in the shoes of these individuals, make them actually be empathetic and compassionate. And this is what these individuals seem to have a problem with. It seems to be lacking. And I don't understand that. How can you be unempathetic to your own sisters and brothers of this world? But you got to help them to understand that, you know something? I'm going to say this up front. I'm not going to use what most progressives and most liberals use. They automatically go to rape and incest. And rape and incest is a short number. It's a smaller number of these cases. The majority of people, and medical too. I mean, you're talking about, I think I've seen figures where you're talking at the higher end, 15 to 20%. Of these cases actually involve rape, incest, or illness. And, you know, that's still significant, but, you know, it's not enough to base an entire argument on. You still have 80% of other, right? But even these ones are not shameful. You know, I've met individuals who have went to have abortions. I've talked with them afterwards. I've observed their mannerisms. And I'll tell you something. These individuals aren't coming back and you know, singing hallelujah and, you know, the disease is gone from within me. A lot of them are depressed. A lot of them are withdrawn. A lot of them do need counseling. They don't need to be told that they're sinful, that they're against God, and that God hates them and everything like that. These individuals have just went through something traumatic. They made an incredible decision to go against their maternal instinct, which is to protect that being inside of them, and to have it aborted because of some kind of a circumstance. Now, empathy requires us to see the emotional devastation before they go in to have this abortion. Most, unfortunately, most Christians and evangelicals, they're empathetic after the fact. And when I say they're empathetic after the fact is they're wolves who smell blood. Meaning, they see this as an opportunity to bring these people to Christ. So, a lot of them, unfortunately, will beat it into these individuals who are already emotionally damaged, who are emotionally fragile. They'll beat it into their minds that they are evil, and that God will only love them when they say, "I'm sorry for doing this thing which it was so difficult for me to do in the first place." They don't empathize before the fact, because before the fact, hey, let's be honest, there's not much to empathize with for them. They can't gain anything from it. And I apologize. Like I say, I don't mean this to be so harsh, but it is what it is. The reality is the majority of the individuals who have babies young in their lives, they're doing exactly what young people have done for generations. They're having sex early in their lives. And for much of the last, let's say, 600 years, because that's kind of when we started on the path to industrialization, and when industrialization increased, the earlier you had kids, the better off you were and the better chance you had for survival. Martin Luther King briefly touched on this concept for black people individually in a speech that his wife read for him in front of Planned Parenthood. In it, he talked about the shifting in mentality that black people have to go through to stop themselves from planning their families around the rural format or the rural doctrine, where the more kids you have, the better off it was, or the more likely it was that you would survive. Well, we're still working this concept out of our genetics. See, because in the 1700s and 1800s, as industrialization, particularly in this country, started to increase, a lot of people were dying younger. You know, if you live to be 30, you live long. Now, of course, when you when you look in the history books, there's all kinds of stories on the contrary. So we often think, oh, well, no, this is a lie. It wasn't, 30, it was 50 and 60 still. No, what you were doing, you're learning about people who didn't have to work the kind of lives that the rest of Americans had to work. You're learning about the, dare I say it, 1%. You're learning about the upper class who wore the capitalist class. These individuals didn't work in the factories. They didn't live in the cities. They actually lived in, ironically, the suburbs, before the suburbs were created as a consumer haven for the new middle class. They lived in the suburbs, and because of this, their health was significantly better. In the inner cities, everything from violence to alcohol poisoning to just plain hazards on the job could kill a person. In the mines, in the rural areas, in the country areas, you had the same problem, particularly with like lumber lung and all that. People were dying incredibly young. So it was not unusual for 13, 14, and 15-year-olds to have babies. We haven't worked that out of our system yet. Moreover, we don't look at the emotional damages that our consumer culture, particularly our sexualized culture, causes on the minds of our young people. If you're bombarded day after day with sexual images in everything that you read, in everything that you watch, in everything that you look at, you're going to be hyperly sexual, meaning you are going to want to have a lot of sex. Look, you have a lot of sex, there's going to be unwanted pregnancies. Now, if we were more enlightened, we would talk to our kids about sex. We would have conversations with them about not how to do it, although there's some parents who have that conversation too, which I'm not particularly against. But we would talk to them about how to do it safely. We would give them the proper education about when and where, with whom. How do you know this person is the right person to do it with? All those kind of nuanced things that most people today, unfortunately, aren't learning until they're in their late 20s. You don't make them feel conscious about it, or should I say cautious about it, about sex. You make them feel like, something is something natural. It's something that is, it's a cherished act. So therefore, they're careful with it. And then you support them if they have to get an abortion. But this is stuff that's not talked about with evangelicals and Christians, because unfortunately a lot of them perceive sex altogether as just negative. It's something to be shoved in the closet, something to be something it seems that you only do for the making of children. You're not supposed to enjoy it. Which, again, this goes back to into our history. This goes back to, I can't even think about it. It's basically it's all of the 1800s. You weren't supposed to enjoy sex. Women particularly weren't supposed to enjoy sex. And to me, this is just radiating back into our lives. Consumerism, ironically, has helped to bring it out. All of these suppressed feelings that we've had, it just comes back in our culture. It has just came back, and consumerism has been the vehicle that brought it out. So in that sense, I guess consumerism isn't bad, is it? I suppose there's more that needs to be said about this topic, and I guarantee that I will add some addendums to this, but that's all I'm going to say for now. I want to thank you for listening. This is Brian Meredith, and you can always contact me at the Class War Battlefield Podcast at live.com. Trust me when I say that this is a heavy topic, but it's not as complex as people make it. It's not. And ultimately, I think there's a lot of things that we can talk to our Christian and evangelical brothers and sisters about to help them to kind of to marry the very limited view that they have with the reality that is life. I want to thank you for listening. Remember, keep the struggle alive, people. Be strong. Until next time.